Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's Friday.
Thank God it's Friday.
Time for another edition of the Reardon Roundtable. Friday. Now, Mark Reardon on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, on this Friday as we take you into the weekend. And the weekend cannot officially start without the Reardon Roundtable. It happens to be state law. Some people are unaware of that, but in fact, it is. Let me welcome the panel on the Zoom call. I can see them. You cannot. And if you can, you're hacking into the system. So congratulations. With us this afternoon, Jane is off. There was a big round of applause there. Some people not crazy about Jane, but we love her. Jeff Rainford pitch hitting, former chief of staff to Mayor Slay. Rainford, how are you?
Good. Does that mean I filibuster pretty much the whole hour?
That means that, yeah, you basically get to interrupt all the other guests, and I will cut you. Dave will have to cut you off in the studio and allow me to take over. Yes, Jeff, very good. You have to play the role. You got to make sure that you get it right here. Gene Evans, the former executive director of the state GOP, is with us this afternoon. Hey, Gene, how are you?
I'm great. Good to be here.
And State Representative Steve Butts, Democrat, South City, also with us, proudly wearing his SLU gear this afternoon, although SLU needs a little help right now. Our local teams are kind of falling apart, unfortunately. How are you, Mr. Butts?
I'm good. You're so right. We need them to get on a little bit of a roll. They're going to maybe miss the tournament. So it's going to take a little miracle.
I don't think everything – well, look, I think COVID has a lot to do with these interruptions and everything. It's just so tough. I feel bad for the SLU team in particular because they were primed the last two NCAA tournaments. But, look, they may have a run in them here. We'll see what happens. Let's kind of start on the COVID topic and where we are because there are a lot of good things happening. We're getting more open up here in St. Louis County. The numbers are dropping across – really across the globe. They continue to drop. It's a combination of the vaccine, the herd immunity. People may be hunkering down. But, of course – Of course. And Jeff, I'll start with you. The experts, Dr. Fauci, and I had Dr. Garza on this week, they can't seem to get too optimistic. Now, they don't want to tell us that we're across the goal line until we are, but you're down in Florida, so you have, I think, a different perspective as far as what's going on with different types of restrictions compared to other parts of the country. So you feel pretty optimistic? I feel more optimistic than I ever have throughout the pandemic. That's usually not a good thing because I get it wrong in my gut so often. But where are you on this?
No, I'm optimistic. I've been watching the city and county cases, city of St. Louis, city of St. Louis County cases almost every day. And they change them every day. They update them every day. And the numbers have been going down, down, down. And in almost every category are now below the benchmarks they had said is, they didn't say it was a danger zone, but the danger zone. More and more people are getting vaccinated. There are more and more vaccinations available. I saw the Wall Street Journal yesterday, predict like once we really are out of the woods, we'd have like a roaring 20s. Kind of a spending spree to boost the economy. There's now discussion again that inflation, I haven't heard this in a long time, that inflation may be a problem. As far as the public health people go, you know, they're always going to be the ones who are going to be, you know, put the damper on things. And they're always going to be the ones that, yeah, it's getting better. But if we stop, don't, you know, it's the same thing if you go to your doctor. If you ask your doctor, what are you supposed to do? He's going to say, eat vegetables. He's not going to tell you to eat ice cream. So that is their role. I respect them for their role. I take it seriously. But I do personally feel like we're on the verge of turning a corner. and that, you know, I'm not ready for a big sigh of relief until the Enterprise Center is full with 18,000 people. Then I'll have a big sigh of relief. But I think we're on the right track. We're getting close.
I do too. Gene Evans. Whoop, I don't think we can hear you, Gene. You might have yourself muted. I'm not sure, Dave, why that's happening. Let's try that again.
Can you hear me? I'm not muted.
Yep. Yeah, now we can hear you.
Okay.
Technical difficulties. Gremlins.
That Wall Street Journal article earlier in the week was very optimistic, and I'm optimistic. I'm an eternal optimist anyway. I'd say, let's get back to work. Let's get back to school. We don't need any more bailouts. We just need people to get back to work. And we need our restaurants to be open and fully functioning and people to get outside and spend some money and get back to normal. I think people are ready for it. And I'm ready to watch some Cardinal baseball and Blues hockey and go to concerts and everything. Let's go.
You know, Steve Butts, I was in Las Vegas last weekend, and I have a little perspective because I've been there three times during the last 7 months or so, 8 months, I suppose, and I've seen it grow each and every time. And the airport that was just vacant the last two trips was now, I won't say bustling, but a lot more people. The airplane was full. People were down on the strip. Everyone was wearing their masks, but they're ready to get back to their lives. And I don't know if we're going to have 18,000 people in, you know, an indoor arena, but I don't see any reason why we can't have more than half capacity as we get toward the summer with Busch Stadium. But from your perspective and from what's going on in the state, I mean, the vaccine is still the major issue. And I even had the St. Charles County executive on this week. We've seen the back and forth between Dr. Garza and the governor. So one of the concerns is still getting the vaccine to enough people.
Yeah, it is all about the vaccine right now. I agree with everybody else. I'm optimistic, and I've listened to your interview very recently with Dr. Garza, and when Dr. Garza is cautiously optimistic, that means he's optimistic. He's just a cautious kind of guy. So I'll say that was my whole beef with the governor. I was like, for the governor to insinuate Dr. Garza has instilled and spread fear and panic were his words. I'm like, clearly, you're not listening to Dr. Garza, because he instills competence and professionalism and almost at times a little boredom. You know, it's he's not a fear and panic kind of guy. People want the vaccine, Mark. Every day I'm on a couple different Facebook groups where we're just posting where you can get it. I can't explain it. How come I can send constituents down to Rolla and Hannibal and they get it quicker than they can here in the city? It's a supply and demand issue. Dr. Garza addressed that and said there was a time we couldn't get to testing. Now testing's super easy. We will get there with the vaccine. It's been a difficult rollout. You know, I'm sure there's several people to blame and maybe really nobody to blame. But people do want
that
vaccine.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think just getting the shot into arms. But you're right. You know, look, I've got friends that have been very aggressive on this, and they've managed to go to Hannibal or Rolla or St. Jan and get the shot. So if you're creative, if you know what you're doing. And then I've got friends also. You know, there are a lot of people out there. We've talked about this just a little bit, but there are these extra doses or, you know, I have a situation in Columbia where there's some friends that kind of swooped in last week on some doses that were available, but they didn't want to really admit to people that it had happened. And I can understand that to a certain extent because of the way that this is prioritized. On the other hand, I think, and I even hear health experts, not that people should jump the line, but get the vaccine into people's arms, as many as you possibly can right now. That's what's important.
Correct. The better, the faster, you know, no jumping arms, but it would be horrible to waste doses. I can't think of anything worse than that.
So should teachers,
yeah,
Jeff, I'll start with you. Let's talk about teachers in the vaccine, because obviously the priority has been older Americans for the most part. We know that. But the teachers jumping to the front of the line, I'm fine with that if the teachers are going to go in the classroom. But the union is still hesitant on the commitment for that. And Joe Biden and the administration seem to be dancing around that a little too much.
Yeah, we need our kids back in the classroom. They are all kids at all socioeconomic levels, but especially low-income kids are really suffering for not being in the classroom. And losing a whole year has been, it's not anybody's fault. I mean, we had a virus, but losing the year is a disaster. They need to get back into the classroom. And if it makes everybody feel better, or if it's better public policy, then vaccinate the teachers and get it. Because our kids, it's obviously not life and death as it is for senior citizens and actually getting the vaccine, But we are doing serious damage, not to every child, but to lots of children in our country by them not getting the education and losing the time that they're losing. So if that's what it takes to get them back inside the classroom learning, along with whatever cautions need to be taken, then I'm for it.
Can I just
one of the things that's go ahead, Gene.
You know, private schools across the area have been open since August, and we have had little of or no incident. There is absolutely no reason that public school kids should not be in school right now. If the teachers are going to get the vaccine, that's great. Beyond that, I know some of the districts, not here locally, but other parts of the country are saying they're not going back even because of that. I think their unions are doing them a disservice by making teachers almost seem like they're not essential, which they actually are very essential. But you go to Florida or you come right here where schools are open, the virus isn't spreading at schools. All these schools should be fully open by now. No excuses.
Well, you know, look, internationally, Scotland schools have been open, other European schools in England, where, by the way, so there was this teacher, you know, parade, not unlike, I described it like you see some of these parades in neighborhoods during the pandemic when kids have a birthday and you can't really greet them in person. So Maryland teachers, supported by the union, drove around in this big parade protesting, you know, a return to in-person classrooms. And the metrics in Maryland are far better than they are in the, you know, the UK, for example, and they're going to school, all students, in 2 weeks, and they have protocol. Now, they have a lot of testing protocols and things along those lines, and the staff is going to be tested regularly. But I don't see why, to your point, Gene, the, you know, private schools have been successful here, and many of the public schools are still dragging their feet in a way that they're talking about virtual for next fall.
Right.
Mark, I'll jump in on, let me jump in on the private schools. You know, I'll be heading to St. Stephen's here as soon as this is over. That's our local school. It's been open since, you know, the very end of August, 1st of September. But most, correct me if I'm wrong, Gene, most of the public schools in our area are open. They didn't open quite as quick, but they have been opening, many offering a hybrid schedule. But I don't think it's exactly accurate what you're talking about if we're talking St. Louis and Missouri.
No, and that's actually a good point. And Steve, you know, in my defense,
so
when I do talk about the situation, well, and I've always put that caveat because I do think that there are better examples in the region. Yes, I agree with you. You know, we have a situation, and this is give and take. I guess I understand the teachers and the superintendent's perspective. Most Fridays in my district in Rockwood have been deemed virtual Fridays. So you have a limited amount of days that the kids are in school already because of how school rolled out. We've had two quarantine situations with my daughter where she's been home for 2 weeks, and there's really not a whole lot of learning that's going on during that time. And then you have virtual Fridays. Now, Dr. Miles, the superintendent from Rockwood, reached out and he explained this is for the teachers. A lot of them are teaching virtual and in person, and I understand that, but you're taking away clearly a day where there could have been in-person learning, and you're removing that from the calendar. I think that the school district should be talking about summer school. For as much as these kids have missed out on school, why not roll out some plans for some summer education that's more intense to get them caught up? Why? I don't think I've heard one thing about that.
I'm for anything that catches our kids up. We did what we needed to do to protect senior citizens. And I know there's a lot of talk about the 500,000 people who lost their lives, but we've saved many, many more lives by some of the things that we've been required or forced to do. But our children have suffered. And at some point, you know, I talked before about, you know, how the economy might come roaring back and how there's optimism. You know, the one thing that I'm not optimistic about is how our children recover from a lost education. So I agree with you.
I agree.
I'm not an educational expert, so I don't know what we need to do, but we need to focus on it.
I agree.
Let's take a break. Hang on. Gene Evans, State Rep Steve Butts, Jeff Rainford, all on the panel. Jane's off on this Friday. We're back with much more on the Reardon Roundtable next on KMOX.
The Reardon Roundtable on KMOX. This
is your birthday. Oh, yeah. One of the panelists turning, was it 26 this weekend? I think I might have the numbers jumbled up a little bit.
I'm dyslexic.
State Rep Steve Butts on Sunday. And happy birthday, Steve, an early happy birthday. He sends me this thing earlier. Gene Evans, also on the panel, Jeff Rainford. And I guess there's a, what is it? We're going to talk about the mayor's race, but there's a mayoral forum on Sunday at 2 p.m. right there on Leona, where I used to live in South City. I used to live near Steve Butts and that particular lovely area of the city, Holly Hills. And I guess Tashara, Kara Spencer, Andrew Jones, Lewis Reed. I don't like the guest list for that one. Maybe a couple of them, but I'm going to pass on that if that's okay.
they're all invited. They're all coming. Presents are not required.
Well, hang on your thoughts, because we will talk about the mayor's race coming up. But let's go to some national stuff here with what happened. Sort of an awkward moment. Gene, I'll start with you after I play the audio here of Kevin McCarthy and Liz Cheney being asked about Donald Trump speaking at CPAC, which apparently he's going to do on Sunday afternoon.
Just directly, for you and the leadership, especially Congresswoman Cheney, do you believe President Trump should be speaking, or former President Trump should be speaking at CPAC this weekend?
Yes, he should.
Congresswoman Cheney?
That's up to CPAC. I've been clear in my views about President Trump and the extent to which following January 6th, I don't believe that he should be playing a role in the future of the party or the country.
On that high note, thank you all very much.
I did love the way that ended, Gene. So your impression, look, I'd like to think there's enough room in the Republican Party, although I'm not convinced of it, to have different opinions on the former president. But, there's the majority of Republicans don't agree with that.
Yeah, I think there's plenty of room for differences of opinion. The party was here long before Donald Trump became a member of it, and will be here long after he's gone. And I'm going to stick by that. Yes, he is. Right now, the leader and probably the most popular person in the Republican Party, and also probably the most divisive person in the Republican Party. So I think, if CPAC, like she said, if they want to invite him, that's up to them. That's not something that members of the legislature would have any impact or say in. But yeah, I think it's going to be controversial what role he plays, but I don't think the party's as divided as the Democrats would like to believe. I mean, I think that, eventually these things will kind of filter out, but 2024 is a long way away and a lot of things can happen. And I think our policies are still very popular. And as long as we stick to our policies, party will be just fine.
Jeff Rainford.
Yeah. Well, first of all, there may be room to disagree within the Republican Party, but there's no room to disagree on Donald Trump and Donald Trump's mind. You're either for him or you're against him. So if you want your party to be united, he doesn't. It's either you're either for him or you're not. Whoever you may be, from dictators in the third world to, committee people in South St. Louis. So, but I'm going to take what I think is a counterintuitive approach to this, which is this. I don't like extremism, period. I don't like left-wing extremism, and I don't like right-wing extremism. And I think Donald Trump blowing up the Republican Party is actually bad for the country. I think him pushing the party out to extreme positions is bad for the party. I think that it also results in a counterbalance of the left going too far out there. I think he's bad for our country. I think he's bad for Republicans. And he's probably, to be honest with you, I think he's kind of bad for Democrats myself.
All right, Steve, I want you to jump in, but Jean's reacting on the Zoom, so I want her to respond to what Jeff had to say there.
I don't agree that Donald Trump is an extremist. I think some of his followers could be seen as extremists, but a lot of his policies were fairly moderate and populist.
What happened on January the 6th?
That's what with his followers. But the vast majority of people were there for peaceful protests, right? Hundreds of thousands. There weren't hundreds of thousands of people didn't go into the Capitol.
So Republicans are not going to be able to whitewash January the 6th and call it something else. The American people saw it with their own eyes.
Jeff, I agree with that. Gene, it's the strange cult of personality around Donald Trump.
Listen.
And I am ready to move on.
Millions of people voted for Donald Trump that do not support going into the Capitol like that. You cannot convince me otherwise. Millions of people, and I know thousands of them. And Mark and I both voted for Donald Trump, and we don't support insurrectionists going into the Capitol. So I totally disagree with.
By the way, I voted for Donald Trump this time, and I made a statement right after that he lost the election, and I didn't buy into some of the nonsense. But Steve, I think that what Gene's saying is important, because there is a distinction in crazy and the policies. And I was never a fan of the president personally, his reckless behavior. And you can go back really decades on that. But your party is, I highlighted this week, you're the party of taking the Mr. away from Mr. Potato Head. You're the party of requiring restaurants in L.A. and San Francisco to not have gas stoves to cook their food. So people in Missouri and the rest of the country who aren't crazy, they just don't want their lives to go down that nanny state nonsense path. So, you know, you want to tag us with all the crazies. That's fine. I'm going to tag you with all the crazies and say that's what people who are just regular, ordinary Americans trying to get through their lives are afraid of. They don't want that crap.
Yeah, I agree with that, Mark. But I'm just saying there is something and has been unique about the personality of Donald Trump that I'm ready to move on. I have moved on. That I agree with Jeff. He said it very well. He doesn't like extremism to the left. He doesn't like extremism to the right. We would like good government, pragmatism, common sense, all those things. So I'll leave it
well,
there.
Well, what's common sense about pushing, because I think people in this country are hurting and I think they need help, but what's common sense about pushing a piece of legislation in the House of Representatives that deals with a $15 minimum wage that rewards states that destroyed businesses like California and New York when it comes to the unemployment, you know, compensation that they've worked into the math on this? I mean, that's not helping people. All this stuff, and Rainford, you know how this works. You guys all know how this works. It's the sausage making, but that's what really sets people off. I think it sets people off on both sides.
Well, again, the Republicans set people off by trying to, you know, by storming the Capitol, putting up with the Proud Boys, all of that. I agree with you. If our party's reaction to Donald Trump and his extreme politics, but his extreme personality and his extreme actions is we push far left the other way, we will. I don't know who the American people are going to vote for. If their choice in the midterms is a party led by Donald Trump and a party that's going far left on economics, I don't know who the heck they're going to vote for. I still think that the vast majority of Americans want to focus on living their lives, you know, having a good job, bringing home pay, enjoying their families, raising their families, educating their children. And it's a relatively small number of people on Twitter who Trump on the right fires up and AOC on the left fires up that are tearing at the fabric. And the rest of us are minding our own businesses and living our lives. So, you know, I don't really like this what about thing. So, you know, Donald Trump leads an insurrection at the Capitol. And then you say, well, what about AOC trying to push through the minimum wage? You know, I've taken responsibility for the crazy stuff that our party does, and I don't like it, and I push back against it, sometimes to my own detriment. I'd actually like to see Republicans do that with Donald Trump.
Well,
Mark, I'll jump in real quick on the minimum wage. So to go to 15, you know, right off the bat, okay, it's, and I think you know that's probably not gonna happen. To gradually raise the minimum wage the way Missourians voted to do over a several year period to get it up to 12, and then
perfectly acceptable.
So it regularly moves up at 2-2.5% per year. I think that's much more reasonable, and that's where maybe we could meet in the middle, and we would improve the plight of a lot of low wage workers, but still help businesses adapt to those higher labor costs.
And by the way, you might be able to convince me, of a, you know, a roll into a $15 minimum wage in the cities where the economics are very, very different, like San Francisco and New York and places like that. I think that's why I support the minimum wage being local, and I would support what's going on in Missouri. Hang on, gang. Jeff Rainford, State Rep Steve Butts, Gene Evans, the former executive director of the state GOP. We have a news update with Sean. We're coming back with much more on the Mark Reardon Show on the Reardon Roundtable for this Friday, sponsored by the Heisey Advisory Group.
The Reardon Roundtable on KMOX.
All right, welcome back. Democratic State Representative Steve Butts, former executive director of the state GOP, Gene Evans, and the former chief of staff for Mayor Slay, Jeff Rainford, all on the panel this afternoon. Steve, this mayor's race, now I used to live in the city and moved out some time ago, but I guess I used to really be aware of when these elections were. But for people who live outside of the city, there has not been a lot of attention on this mayor's race, seemingly. I haven't heard or seen a lot of media, but this is basically going to be decided next week, right? I mean, there is the general election, but the primary is next week.
The primary is next week. It's on Tuesday, March 2nd. And because of the passage of Prop D, this will be a dramatically different look for this primary. We've never voted this way before. First off, it's a nonpartisan municipal election. So you won't go in and ask for a Republican or Democratic ballot. All four candidates are listed. And then it's approval voting. So you vote for the candidate you like the best, and you may vote for additional candidates, technically up to all four, I guess, if you wish. And there's going to be a runoff election in April, about 4 weeks later, where the top two vote getters will have a runoff. So I know it's new. I know it's thinking out of the box a little bit. I kind of like it. And at least this winner in April is going to have 51% of the votes and won't be governing from that disadvantage that
okay,
they have.
Well,
that, you know, you don't.
Who's
going to
win? Who's going to win on who are the top two on Tuesday? What would your prediction be?
I could tell you the top three for positive. it's not Andrew Jones. Okay, I will say.
I mean, there's only three choices then. If it's
correct,
not Andrew Jones,
I'm going to say it's
okay.
I'm gonna guess that the smart money would say, and the polling that I've seen says it's going to be Tashara Jones and Lewis Reed.
Right, and I would tend to agree with that. Rainford, what's your perspective? You know, you used to be very involved in the city politics. So you have to have some thoughts here.
Well, I have a lot, but we don't have enough time for this one. But I think this one's very, very hard to predict. I think that polling nationally has come under question, and you get some kind of what I would call inexpensive polls. And we now have this new voting thing where you can vote for as many people as you want. As you said, it seems to be a low energy, low interest, low money race. You don't see a lot of news about it on radio and TV. So I think it's very difficult to predict. And then you have, you know, possible craziness. So there's sort of one thing we're hearing that Tashara Jones and Kara Spencer are progressives in kind of the AOC mold, the defund the police mold. And we're hearing that their supporters are talking about voting for each other, because at least then they'd have a choice between two progressives, and you wouldn't have a moderate like Lewis Reed or a conservative like Andrew Jones. And, you know, there's only one other place in America that's done this, and that's Fargo. So I'm not a big fan of it yet, but we haven't had it yet. So I'm keeping kind of an open mind, I guess. But as far as predicting what's going to happen, I think it's very, very difficult. I would agree with Steve. Likely it's Tashara and Lewis, but, you know, I wouldn't bet my house on it.
Hey, real quick, Jeff, I'll just say on that, you know, it is low energy. I'm sure it's COVID is part of it. You know, I've always lived in the city. You know, the number of mailings I've received are really not that substantial. But, you know, and it might benefit Kara Spencer, because she's lots of people's second choice, if you know what I mean. So I don't know. It's unique. It's an experiment, that's for sure. And yeah.
That's what we need in the city of St. Louis, an experiment. Gene.
Yeah, exactly.
What happens to the Board of Aldermen if Lewis Reed wins? Do they have another election for that? How does that? What happens there?
So we haven't had a vacancy there in a while. Steve, correct me if I'm wrong. I believe that temporarily the most senior alderman becomes president, and then very quickly we have an election to fill it.
Well, I just hope that one of these candidates who want to defund the police and legalize prostitution in the city do not win, because I think that would be horrible for the city. We need people who want to return the city to be a thriving metropolis that people want to go to and people feel safe. And right now that's not the case. And a couple of these candidates have said publicly that they do want to defund the police and bring in, you know, strip clubs and prostitutes, which I just don't think that you attract businesses and families to a downtown without a good police presence.
Okay, well,
you get more people downtown
slightly,
than you do now if you get strippers
you
and prostitutes.
That, so.
I'll just say that.
So that is not... I presume you're speaking about Tashara. That is not her position. Decriminalizing is one thing. The defunding police, that takes too long to talk about. I'm just going to say that when you say return the city to a place where families want to move downtown, I've lived in the city for 60 years. We've been saying that in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s. So I'm in the camp that says it's time to try something new.
Well, and in all those years, it's been Democrat-led down in the city. I'm saying even go in the city. I don't want to have to move there. I'm not even comfortable going to a Cardinals game anymore, and it's not because of COVID. I drove downtown yesterday to go to a meeting, and I've got, like, terrified because there are no cops, and there's a lot of crime. So whether you call it decriminalizing or whatever you want to call it, we do not need more prostitution flourishing in the city of St. Louis. I just don't think that that's a healthy environment when you're trying to grow and attract businesses and people to live there.
So if I had my way when it comes to the election in the city, if I had my way, I'd like to see some fresh blood in the mix, like a Jack Kotar, who is on our panel. But it's hard for me to see a path, and Jeff, I'll get your reaction to this. If Tashara Jones is the mayor, and maybe I shouldn't discount Kara Spencer, but if she's the mayor and not Lewis Reed, I can't envision a scenario where this isn't going to be all divisive and nothing's going to get done. Now, maybe that'll happen with Lewis as well, but she seems to be the candidate that's not going to really bring people together. We're going to be more divided in the city.
Well, I think whoever gets elected, we need to rally around him, rally around her. I do think that to what Gene's saying, the number one issue, both in polling and from my friends and neighbors in the city, is crime. Interestingly, yeah. Number two is police reform. So, you know, not all city voters are thinking alike. But the number one issue is crime. I will say this, no mayor, what we basically have in the city is a weak mayor system. We have 13 citywide elected officials. The mayor has all of the responsibility, but very little of the power. And whoever comes in, the only way a mayor has been successful, whether it was Francis Lay or Vince Schemel, is you really almost have to be a diplomat. You have to allow people, have to give you the power. You can't just grab it and take it by force, because it doesn't exist under the city charter. So it takes extraordinary political skills. It takes an extraordinary personality, somebody who has to put themselves second and their constituents first, somebody who can be humble, somebody who will compromise, somebody who will build coalitions, somebody who can work with Republicans in Jefferson City. It's a very, very difficult job just because of the city's dynamics and the high level of poverty, made even harder by an antiquated charter. So whoever comes in is going to need all of our help to try to succeed. And that person needs to reach out to all of us in order to succeed.
Jeff, you said that perfectly, and I'd only throw in, you got to rebuild from the COVID pandemic, and the budget, I presume, is going to be tougher than ever. So it's going to take everything you said and more.
Well, and I think, you know, Mayor Carusin has done a good job of putting the city is in a better position financially now than it was when she got there, even with COVID. I mean, she's done a really good job. Her background in finance has helped with that, and that's something I think she can be really proud of.
Well, it's hard for me to give her credit for anything given the crime situation and the lack of intestinal fortitude when it comes to, you know, standing up on that particular issue. And, you know, they're all afraid to say anything. That's my main problem with most politicians, you guys, is that there's no courage to criticize a Kim Gardner because they're worried about alienating. And this happens on both sides, you know, alienating a constituency. I think someone used to have the guts to just be honest about some of the things in this city, and that'll probably never happen. I don't have a lot of hope, no matter who's elected. I wish I did. 2:44. We'll take a break. We're coming back. Jeff Rainford, State Rep Steve Butch, Gene Evans, all on the panel this afternoon. One more segment to go on KMOX.
The Reardon Roundtable on KMOX.
All right, welcome back. State Rep Steve Butts, Jeff Rainford, and former executive director of the state GOP, Gene Evans, on the panel. Let's get into Andrew Cuomo just a little bit. He's still under fire for the nursing home scandal and should be, and there's an investigation even maybe by the FBI. But now there's accusations of, Me Too movement moments with Andrew Cuomo. And you guys would probably agree, the most definitive political program on the planet right now, and has been for a while, is The View. And here's Joy Behar and Meghan McCain.
These allegations should be taken seriously and thoroughly investigated, just like the following. Jim Jordan, covering up and failing to report sexual abuse of minors by former members of the Ohio State University wrestling team. Brett Kavanaugh, the FBI did a hurried 3-day investigation into credible claims from multiple women. Remember that?
I'm really glad Joy brought up Brett Kavanaugh. I actually want to read you a quote about Andrew Cuomo, what he said about Brett Kavanaugh. To Dr. Christine Blasey Ford and all survivors of sexual assault, we believe you and we will fight for you. So by his own metric, believe all women, he is a pervert who has harassed women and he should resign immediately. I agree.
Well, I think Megan kind of won that argument there. I'm not sure where Joy was going down. But look, if everybody else, if there's going to be a standard that is equal, and there's not, Gene, then you would take a look at these allegations about Andrew Cuomo, but nobody wants to touch him, do they?
No, they don't. And the media is not even. I mean, you're covering it. I guess they discussed it there, but a lot of the major networks have skipped over this. That just like they skipped over what was going on with him in the nursing homes last fall, and everyone hailed him as a hero. The guy has exhibited bullying behavior over and over again. That he did this to a woman is not surprising. And guess what? There's never just one. There's going to be more. No guy who does that kind of behavior does it to just one woman. They do it to multiple women, especially if they feel threatened or if they have some power thing going on like he apparently does. And the Democrats have like a war on women. They only believe women when it fits their purpose. Otherwise, forget it. And then they all circle the wagons to protect their own.
Well, yeah, first of all, that's not true. It is true of some Democrats. It's not true of many Democrats. Al Franken is not in the U.S. Senate anymore. I'm just going to speak for myself as a Democrat, and I have zero tolerance for any of it. If he did it, whatever the right punishment should be, if it's criminal, then criminal. If it's that he loses his job, he loses his job. As far as I'm concerned, any man who does that, whether he's a Republican or a Democrat or in the private sector, as far as I'm concerned, Kavanaugh should not be on the Supreme Court. And if it turns out that this stuff is true,
Cuomo
shouldn't be the governor of New York.
There was zero proof when it comes. The Kavanaugh example is terrible because there was no proof at all. And by the way, you know, I'm glad you mentioned Al Franken because I think Al Franken got jobbed. Of all these things are not all the same.
If you're going to take a zero tolerance to this stuff, my view of it is, and maybe I'm a little extreme on this, like I am on guns, we need to root this out of our culture. And so that's why I take the position that I take. And one, you know, women have been putting up with this crap for 10,000 years, and we need to root it out of our culture. That's just my position, right?
Amen.
I'm just one person. Other people can take a different position, but Kavanaugh is out as far as I'm concerned. If this is true about Cuomo, and I really haven't read every detail
right,
about
for
it.
How could you say there was no evidence about Kavanaugh whatsoever? Even the people who knew her said that they couldn't remember. So, yeah, I'm fine when there's actual evidence of people, but in that case, it was laughable. There was nothing at all there. So I'm going to take issue with that for sure. And, you know, when it comes to women, I don't want women to be treated in a horrific way, but I think that we've gone too far with a lot of these things. And in the Al Franken situation, was it something that deserved an apology after the fact? Maybe. I guess so. I think everyone in the moment thought it was okay, so he apologized. But is that a cancel culture moment? I'm not a big fan of his politics. I'm just saying in an effort to be sort of equal on these things, I think he was treated in an unfair way. You know, Charlie Rose, Matt Lauer, they're not all the same. Everybody has little differences. Jeff, let me go to this because we have to talk about Tiger Woods. And Steve, you play golf, and Rainford and I play golf together. I think we all, as a planet, had the same reaction when we first heard the news and we saw the wreckage. Is this Kobe Bryant again, one of the biggest, you know, most influential, iconic athletes, one of the greatest of all time, going to be taken away? Luckily, that didn't happen, but that was a big moment, and you know, the golf world is hurting right now because of it.
I know if you see the when you saw the car wreck, when I saw it and I heard, you know, Tiger was in surgery for leg injuries, I thought, man, I mean, he's lucky. His kids are lucky. Actually, not just the golf world, the world was lucky that it appears he's going to recover. Obviously never enough to be, you know, back at the professional level of golf, I'm sure. But it was a horrific crash, and I'm glad that Tiger Woods is still with us. He's done a lot for the game. He's done a lot for kids. I love the biography on him, his relationship with his parents. There's a lot to like about Tiger Woods, and he's a flawed human being like all of us, But I wish him a speedy recovery, and I know the rest of the sports world certainly does.
Rainford.
Yeah, I'm a huge, huge Tiger Woods fan. Love to watch him play, particularly in his heyday. I know a lot of people are talking about Hogan. Ben Hogan also had a horrific crash and came back. You know, these are two different sets of injuries. These are horrific injuries. And I think we probably need to prepare ourselves for the fact that we've probably seen Tiger Woods play his last competitive round.
Unfortunately, I think you're right. You know, the thing about Tiger Woods, and when he came on the scene, I remember watching golf in the 70s and the 80s and the early 90s, but golf wasn't cool, really. I mean, you had John Daly. He was unique. You had some people that were different. But you look at all these young players on the tour right now and how they were inspired by Tiger Woods, because you had a whole generation of kids, maybe two generations of people that said, golf doesn't look like that, you know, that boring old man sport. Let's get involved in this. And we're inspired by, you know, this guy, Tiger Woods. So I think that's pretty cool, just the effect that he's had on the sport. And obviously it's coming off a magnificent year during the pandemic, because people couldn't do a whole lot else when it came to that. All right, now we got Cardinal baseball coming up. Our first game, crew, is on Sunday. I think Wednesday afternoon, I'll be interrupted just a little bit for a spring training game. We get to see these guys in action. There's a lot of excitement about Nolan Arenado. Tom Ackerman had him on the Garage Happy Hour last night. Who is not ready for baseball on this panel? Let's get it going.
Super ready, and let's can't wait to be inside of Busch Stadium. So that's going to be,
yeah,
it's just going to be fantastic.
Listen, I think that anytime you get a transformational trade, whether it was getting Lou Brock in 1964, you know, or this the thing with Aaron with our new third baseman. I think you just got to get super, super excited. I'm super excited. You know, we got two cornerstone first infielders who hit with power. You know, the last couple of years have been frustrating to watch the offense. I'm super psyched.
Yeah, I think really high expectations, you know, and Cardinal fans have high expectations anyway, but we're going to be super high expectations. But it's always more fun when you have offense, right? Like it has been rough. Like you said, Rainford, it's, you know, these games where you're leaving men on and you just can't seem to put it all together when you need to get a run or two. So I'm super excited, and I'm glad to see, you know, Wainwright back and Yachty. I think that just, you know, Cardinals are such a historical team, and people come out to watch those guys, and it kind
it's
going
to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. But yeah, to Steve's point, I really hope that Cardinal Nation is not robbed of the opportunity to see this team in person at large crowd levels this summer, because I think that the way things are trending, that's going to be possible. State Rep Steve Butts, happy birthday early, 26th
Thanks,
birthday
Mark.
On Sunday. I'm so proud of you. Jeff Rainford also with us. Jeff, we'll see you. Have a great weekend. And Gene Evans, thanks for being on the panel. Thank you, gang.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.